everybody! Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 26 for April 30th. Chance Watson and the long-lost Madison Hardy bringing you the news today. Madison, how are you?
I'm doing good. Back from vacation, feeling great.
How was vacation?
It was really, really nice. Unfortunately, everyone's going to hate me for this. I went to California. I enjoyed it. So everyone can take that.
As a Post Falls, North Idaho boy, I am required to say boo.
Oh, yes, yes. Except everyone from here.
I know.
California.
I personally don't, but I think it's required. Like, I have to. I think there's a law about it. Like, if I'm from North Idaho, I have to, like, initially go, ugh, California. And then I can be my normal self again.
So it's like Tourette's.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. By the way, this episode is brought to you by Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging unique mining skills, and developed over the company's long history. By innovating new practices, to learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit HeclaMining.com. And I know they're hiring at the Friday too. I always like to throw that in there. So if you're looking to become a miner, Madison.
I feel like I'd be really good.
You think you could just...
I think I could... Honestly, I know nothing about mining. I was trying to make a joke and it didn't work out.
It just... There was nothing to draw from on that.
You know, I started thinking I've been working on the railroad, but then I realized it's an entirely different thing.
Totally different thing. We don't even have a railroad in the valley anymore.
Well, they're working on it.
We have a fancy trail. It's a really nice trail.
A fancy trail.
Yeah, there used to be railroads that went through the whole valley, and then they got rid of all the rails, and they turned it into a bike path.
Is it the BNSF?
It's the Trail of the Coeur d'Alenes. It goes from, like, Harrison to...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's really cool. One day I really want to do the whole ride.
Yeah, when I went to Harrison, they were telling me about that. I did a series of stories on different cities around in Kootenai County.
Yeah.
I went to Harrison. I liked Harrison.
It's great.
To me.
For a little while there, I had a long going tradition of going there for 4th of July.
I think that's a very common North Idaho thing. I don't think you're quite special with that one.
Well, it used to be Bayview. It used to be the main one.
I really want to go to Bayview. That was one of the first places I wrote a story about, actually,
really?
When I came here. Yeah.
I always thought it was funny that Bayview's part of Kootenai County. If you look at, like, a map.
It's quite north.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super north. For Kootenai County, anyway.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Madison, you're a part-time hockey fan.
Part-time hockey fan, full-time reporter.
Yes, absolutely.
That's what my bio on LinkedIn says.
You should add that on there.
I should.
So as of today, as we talk about this, the Seattle Kraken have made their final payment to the NHL, and they are now officially a team. Ron Francis, the GM, can go to meetings. Like, he can say that I'm a GM.
He can go to meetings now.
I have this humorous picture in my head of, like, last week he tried to go to the GM's meeting and they, like, held the door. Like, they wouldn't let him in.
Like, no, sir.
It's like, no.
Not yet.
No, where's the money?
You know, honestly, good for them. I am excited. Obviously, growing up in Boise, the closest hockey team I really got to go to was not quite up to the level of national standards. And going to Seattle, I would rather see a hockey game than a Mariners game. I'm so sorry, everyone that's listening to this right now.
No, I think that's fair. And anybody who knows me knows that I've never really held any punches on my thoughts about baseball. But that's okay. It's to each his own.
You know? Baseball's my number two for sure. But there's something about going to a hockey game. Mm-hmm. There's nothing quite like it.
No, there isn't. And I'm really excited to actually. While I don't necessarily like the name of the arena, I do think they're going to do some. You're giving me a face right now.
What's the name?
So it's in the old Key Arena,
okay,
where they used to do where the Sonics play and the Seattle Thunderbirds, the
absolutely
WHL team.
Yeah.
Now it's called Climate Pledge Arena.
Oh. Are you? Oh.
Yeah. See, that sounds like...
That's so such a Washington thing, dude. Oh, I know. I don't even know.
Oh, that's so such a Washington thing. See, now, like, if they named it something and then they're like, this arena has made a pledge to be more... like, then I would totally fine.
Yeah, it's more climate-friendly, fine. But, you know, from my experience,
it doesn't roll off the tongue, you know?
It doesn't. But from my experience, a lot of arenas are named after, you know, the sponsors. Mm-hmm. AT&T Arena, Boise has Taco Bell Arena, you know, those kind of things. Who's making this decision? Like, if they are going to... I mean, I hate that I'm going to say this. If they're going to use paper straws and, like, you know, more climate-friendly materials, then, yeah.
What are the odds of people just drop the climate and call it the Pledge Arena and it's going to be, like,
Well, then pledge. That's, like, super Idaho, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance.
Like, or like, Lemon Pledge.
I like Lemon Pledge.
It Who doesn't good. Love Lemon Pledge? It's a fantastic cleaning product. It's fantastic. But yeah, so they can now, they can do all that stuff and they can sign people now too. So like if there are any free agents, I doubt they would at the moment, but if they wanted to, if there's any free agents out there, they could sign them.
I guess we'll have to watch.
Oh, I know. I'm very excited to talk a little bit about some the Seattle Kraken stuff as they move forward.
It'll be good.
Especially if they get some local players.
Yeah, I think that's, they need to... Obviously, they still have, they have fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be people that are excited to see it. But if they can latch on to this local Pacific Northwest crowd,
you know they're gonna.
You know, then they can get serious funding. They can really do a lot of things that they wouldn't do if they're just gonna hire out brand name people.
Oh yeah, even if they're not a star, like when Vegas came in, Vegas is the newest hockey team in the league. Mm-hmm. They picked up Derek Englund. He wasn't a top line guy by any means, but he was from Vegas.
Yes.
And it's always nice to have a local boy on there. So I think there, especially Spokane has been a huge, I mean, there's a lot of talent that's coming
up here across the Northern Corridor. You know, can go through Montana and then it's directly into the Dakotas, Minnesota, Michigan, and those are big.
Yep. There's a lot of Pacific Northwest hockey players in the league right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get I think anybody who is familiar with any local professional athletes of whatever sport, most recently Tyler Johnson, he plays for the Tampa Bay Lightning, just won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Good for him. Tyler, you're always welcome to come on the podcast and talk to us about that. It sounds like he might be available in the expansion draft. Tampa might try. It's not that Tampa doesn't want him. It seems like they just can't afford him.
Yeah, cap, and that happens at a certain point.
The cap didn't go up because of the pandemic. So, you know, what can you do? But there's a lot of other, I mean, you've got Kyler Yamamoto. Played against him when I was a kid. He's very good. But yeah, it'll be exciting to see.
I think as we get back out of the pandemic, more things start happening. Sports are definitely going to pick up. Mm-hmm. I remember that was one of those things when at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone I know is just like, what do you mean we don't have sports? You know, I'm sitting at home all day and you're robbing me of my sports.
Nothing else to do.
I know you have to talk to your children. It's just crazy.
And I think on top of it all, it'd just be nice to have a local hockey team. Like you mentioned previously, what's the closest hockey team to us before Seattle? Driving time. Guess. Tell me right now. What do you think?
Montana?
No, like professional hockey team. Montana does not have a pro hockey team. That would be cool.
That would be cool if they did. Mm-hmm. Was it Canada?
I think it's Calgary.
Yeah.
Calgary is the closest driving time-wise, and then followed up closely by Denver.
Denver's far, though. Mm-hmm.
Vegas, and then the California teams. Vancouver.
Yeah.
Close to Seattle. That's going to be a cool little rivalry they'll have.
Yeah. That's always nice.
Yep. I think it'll be cool. All right. Enough hockey talk. There's going to be plenty of it in the future here. let's jump into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines. But before we go into that, initial success or total failure? Mad Bomber Brewing Company, located at 9265 North Government Way in Hayden, Idaho, is a veteran-owned and operated business that has been serving North Idaho since 2013. Swing by the brewery to try their newest beer back on tap, the Nitro Stout. Be sure to also check out their special events throughout the week, including trivia on Mondays, all-day happy hour on Tuesdays, open mic night on Wednesdays, discounted growler fills on Thursdays, and live music on Fridays and Saturdays. Mad Bomber Brewing also offers a wide selection of ciders from North Idaho Cider for those who may not want beer. Located near Triple Play, come by and mention the podcast to receive $1 off your first beer. Mad Bomber Brewing, recklessly brewed in Hayden, Idaho.
Reckless.
Recklessly brewed. Recklessly. That's a fun word to say. I hear that they've got a cool event coming up on this weekend.
Oh, really? What is it?
EOD Memorial Fundraiser. So the whole business there, it's ran by former EOD guys, you know, like Hurt Locker.
Mm-hmm.
So every year they do like an EOD Memorial Fundraiser event to raise money for the memorial.
What are they doing for the fundraiser?
It's all digital this year, so they're like chiming in over Zoom with a bunch of other places that are doing the same thing.
Oh, that's great.
One of the fun things that I'll admit I've done in the past, we have an actual EOD bomb suit in there. So you get to throw that on and play some fun games while you do it too. Yeah.
Nice.
It's, spoiler alert, it's heavy. I mean, it has to stop a bomb, so.
So what you're telling me is I'll crumple into a puddle?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
but hopefully they might even get some active duty EOD guys out there to, yeah. Okay, we're talking mayor stuff right now, it looks like. Whitmire won't seek third term. This is by Mike Patrick. Mayor, Coeur d'Alene mayor rather, Steve Whitmire isn't prone to overstatement. In announcing that he will not seek a third term this November, he said, 8 years is good. That's a good solid term, yeah. A rabid baseball fan, Whitmire also tossed a Yogi Berra quote out on the table. Quote, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. That's what I'm going to do, he said with a smile. Whitmire, who turned 60 this year, won his first term in 2013 by easily defeating Mary Souza, 4,719 votes to 356. 4 years later, he wasn't even opposed. That's not to say Whitmire hasn't faced his share of challenges over the past 7.5 years. One of his community's greatest blessings over that time has also become a curse, one that will long outlast his mayoral tenure. Growth. Quote, it's good news because we have a fantastic quality of life here. People are flocking here from Seattle, Portland, and elsewhere, he noted. They're leaving a place with a quality of life they don't like for a great quality of life. But the solution is also a problem. Quote, the biggest challenge for the next mayor and council is housing affordability, he said, that will drive a lot of what the city can do. Looking back, Whitmire's accomplishments, he listed effectively filing 10 of 13 city department head positions, strengthening public safety, creating Atlas Waterfront Park, and moreover, a makeover of Memorial Field. Until he turns over the reins of city leadership in 8 months, Whitmire said he promises not to become a slacker. Quote, going to make sure the people of Coeur d'Alene get their money's worth, he said. Man's been the mayor for, it seems like, a good chunk of my life.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's the Coeur d'Alene native.
Yep.
I think that's one of the things that really appealed to people from here. You know, he grew up here. He ran in the same parks as other people. He went to high school with a lot of the people that voted for him.
Yep.
And that gives you some surety, especially as we move into this age where people are just coming into the area. It's nice having a local face in office.
I could not agree more. It's his name has become synonymous with, not that he lasted as long as this next example that I'm going to use, but Rocky Watson. He was sheriff here forever, and it was just – became a thing. Like
same with Ben Wolfinger.
Exactly. Ben was after that, and he was. I mean, that was a long tenured thing. So yeah, I think he's definitely gonna be missed, and I can't wait to see the power vacuum that creates for who's gonna run for mayor now.
I can wait.
It's gonna be fun to cover, huh, Madison?
I'm gonna let Craig handle that.
Oh, okay.
But you know, going off what he said about growth, Coeur d'Alene housing market emerges number one. This one's by Bill Bewley. Coonie County's real estate industry has been sizzling for the past year and is somehow still heating up. The Wall Street Journal and Realtor.com announced Tuesday that Coeur d'Alene was number one in the nation in their new emerging housing market index. There are houses to buy in the city of about 50,000 people, but not many, and they're not cheap. According to the Coeur d'Alene Association of Realtors, there are 154 current active residential listings as of April 12th. In a normal market, going back about 5 years, there would be about 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Bidding once on homes, making an offer after a virtual tour rather than in person, offering more than the asking price, and waiving inspections have become standard practice. Some house homes are sold within a day of being listed. One local sold his Sanders Beach area home for the full asking price of $785,000 within 3 days of being listed, and the buyer didn't even look at the home in person. A few Coeur d'Alene homes currently listed for sale on Realtor.com included a 980-square-foot mobile home for $275,000, a three-bedroom, 3,008-square-foot home for $850,000, and a three-bedroom, 2,428-square-foot condominium for $1.9 million. Gone are the days, at least for now, when your average blue-collar worker earning $40,000 could buy a home for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
George Ratu, senior economist for Realtor.com, said the traditional drivers in a strong real estate market are prices, demand, and supply. But the study found that the quality of life, economic vitality, and strength were the key factors in people wanting to move to Coeur d'Alene. They like what they see. Quote, people don't move to an area just because housing is cheap, Ratu said. Quality life has become a number one priority for a lot of Americans as a result of the health pandemic.
Madison, I mean,
this makes me want to cry.
It does. I mean, we are definitely in. It's no longer chatter. Like, we're in a very unique type of housing crisis at the moment.
Usually
housing crisis means something else, but it's
of a crisis. But it's not quite a crisis from what I've heard. The main thing that I'm worried about, and this is me being personal, I have an apartment down here mm-hmm. that I can narrowly afford.
Mm-hmm.
And when people think, you know, downtown apartment, Coeur d'Alene, no, it's like it was dirt cheap when I got it, a little scary when I got it, and it's the bare minimum that I can afford.
Yeah.
And there is a huge possibility that my landlord at the end of my term can say, oh, we're going to bump it $300 because that's what everyone around us is. Yep. And I physically cannot live here anymore.
I agree. I'm absolutely in the same boat. In fact, I know two individuals that were in homes. Basically, they were leasing or renting. The actual homeowners received cash offers and they were kicked out. And now they went and purchased nice RVs and have to live that way. Like, I mean, it's absolutely crazy that it was like that. I don't know if you saw that viral video that went out, that guy trying to sell an apple on Facebook. Did you see it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. You're laughing about it. But it went around because I think it was made specifically for like our area in the housing market right now. But it's so true. Like, I mean, it's not, you don't even need to look at something anymore. There's a cash price on it immediately and it's thrown down. It's, we'll see. I don't know. I'm not the person to ask to what the fix is, but I hope somebody's got something.
Everyone just keep me in your prayers that my landlord won't bump my rent. Even $100, I'm done.
Please. Or, yeah, absolutely. It's for everybody's sake. Everybody in any type of that, apartment complexes or anything like that. We're both in the same boat. Okay, moving down to Thursday, April 29th headlines. Dalton Gardens target deer issues in public workshop. I'm glad this one fell to me. more than 50 town residents came to a special workshop Wednesday designated to explore ideas to solve what many residents see as an ongoing problem in Dalton Gardens. Local deer are wandering down from Canfield Mountain and the surrounding wilderness into the city limits, where they promptly chew gardens and run into roads. After years of debate, the city is now considering a plan to allow trained bow hunters to kill deer that have strayed into town. That plan would authorize expert archers to perch in tree blinds and thin the herd from above. Quote, while the kids are in school, we do specific, highly organized hunts, Jim Flowers of the Coeur d'Alene Bowman said. I suspect we want to conduct these organized hunts at least five times, and then we would do an assessment. But Virginia Grob, the daughter of a game warden, said that without a hard count of exactly how many deer the city is looking at, Dalton Gardens is shooting blind. That's good. I like that. Good job, Craig. Quote, I think the first thing this council needs to do is get hard-backed science in front of them, she said. You really need to get science. There's a lot of passion in this room. I don't want to get pitted against my neighbor right now. A population survey is number one on your list. because this is a workshop with no action item, no vote was cast. Quote, I know your frustration. Those of you that can't stand these animals, Mayor Don Edwards said. I know your frustration. Those of you that love these animals, I love animals too. I'm split 50-50. I know we need to do something. We, as your elected officials, we have to figure something out. Okay, so
you're like, let me prepare myself for a statement here.
I've never lived in Dalton Gardens, in that area near Canfield Mountain, but my sister has lived in that area for basically most of my life. And it's always been a joke, like especially growing up when we would drive out to her house at 4:30 a.m. To go hunting. We would, you know, pick up my brother-in-law and go up and go out somewhere, like to Avery or to Kogalala or, you know, somewhere in the out of town. But we always joked that we would go to those places and see nothing, but we could have stuck the butt of our rifle out the window on the way to their house and gotten something. Obviously a joke, but it's always been an issue that we have seen that there's the deer are just everywhere in that area.
See, my thing is I'm not local. I'm going to say it right now. Everyone can hate me from here on out, but my family moved here when I was 10 years old, to Boise from, England, out of the country. And we were blown away that there was just wildlife in the streets. And so personally for me, it's never been this thing that's like, oh my gosh, a deer is in the road again. Are you kidding? It's like, oh, look at Bambi.
Right.
You know? So, you know, I get it. It's a problem. But at the same time, I'm like, are you really that upset that we have this beautiful abundance of wildlife that nowhere else gets to have? Yep. I'm so sorry.
I think she's right on the money with the science of it. We need to know how many, you know, accidents are related to deer and wildlife in the area, property damage and that kind of thing. I mean, you know, if I'm the garden thing, I guess from my personal perspective, that doesn't necessarily – that's not a reason enough to get something going. But, I mean, if it is causing traffic fatality, you know, damage or something significantly, I'd be open to this idea. It's not necessarily – I don't know. I feel like it needs to be talked a little bit about more. But from personal experience, I can definitely say that there, the number of deer in that area is not being exaggerated. There is a lot, and they're there all the time. So, I mean, but that being said, I don't live in the area. I don't know if – I could not personally say if that's a bigger problem or not, as they are saying it is. But we'll, I don't know. We'll
watch and see.
Population control for animals in this area is always – a hot button topic. And it's, I mean, this particular case, it's deer in Dalton Gardens, but you know, it's especially when you start talking about wolves, you know, wolves and elk populations and that kind of thing that brings up, it's always a controversial subject around here on what's going to be done with wolves.
Literally and, writing about wolves right now.
I know. And
I don't even want to hear it.
I think all of us at one time have written a wolf story.
Yes,
wolf bot.
Oh, I'm not because it's been. We'll talk about this next Tuesday.
it has literally been a topic of discussion since I was in high school.
Well, don't get me started.
Just don't even. Okay, we'll move on. Or we'll talk about it next week.
We'll talk about it next week. You'll read my story.
Yep.
So let's move on to a far more touching subject.
Okay. Good.
Rathdrum woman sentenced for killing infants. This one's by Kay Thornbrew.
Okay.
Elizabeth Keys, 24, pleaded guilty in accordance with Alford to murder in the second degree and concealment of evidence, both felonies. Keys was accused of killing her infant son and leaving him in a plastic bag on the front porch of a Rathdrum home where she slept. Keys said she did not know she was pregnant before giving birth in a bathroom at the residence on April 24th. Police said Keys strangled the child and used a box cutter to split open his stomach before placing the body and other debris in a plastic bag.
Oof.
The child's body was cut 13 times, prosecutors said. Police said evidence showed the child was born alive. A household member who reportedly believed Keys had experienced a miscarriage brought Keys and the child's body to Kootenai Health. Dr. James Kirby, a psychiatrist with Kootenai Behavioral Health, and medical staff reportedly requested a psychological consultation because they believed Keys was in a dissociative state. People experiencing a dissociative event might feel as if they were in a dream and might have impaired ability to make decisions. Dr. Andrew Nanton, a psychiatrist employed by Oregon State Hospital, evaluated Keyes twice. He said that Keyes is intellectually disabled with a low IQ and verbal processing difficulties. Mm-hmm. Quote, it probably takes more effort for her to understand what is going on in the world around her than others might have, he said. Both psychiatrists said in court that they believe Keyes is not a dangerous person. Huh. Quote, while we would have liked a longer sentence, it is good Ms. Keyes will be incarcerated for a long time, quote, Kootenai County prosecuting attorney Barry McHughhead. McHugh said in a news release.
I remember when this first happened, and I remember the initial reports of, like, her explaining herself. And even after you read this story, like, the cause and effect, like, her explanation of why and what happened literally made no sense. So I'm inclined to believe the experts on this one and say, like, okay, there's something wrong with this gal's head.
Well, frankly, I think, you know, in situations where people do these things, a good majority of the time, they're not right. Mm-hmm. And while I don't think that means that it should be taken lightly on mm-hmm. them, I don't think that a serial killer should get a hug and say it's okay.
Agreed.
I think that they should get serious help.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. I mean, and I think in this case, like I said, like, you know, her explanation of, like, I didn't know I was pregnant. Like, that doesn't, like, she said that in, like, almost like a response to why I did this. And, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, how does that mean this? Does that make any, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We're not in her head. Maybe in her mind it makes sense, I guess. I don't know. But
it's sad.
Yeah, that is probably the only thing that makes sense in all this, is that it is sad. Mm-hmm. No good from that. All right, jumping to today's headlines, Friday the 30th, complaint against NIC could impact accreditation. Oh, this is by you. You read this.
Yeah, so just as tensions at North Idaho College seem to be settling down, a complaint by four regional human rights task force boards has brought the institution's accreditation eligibility into question. The complaint, dated March 12th, was sent to the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities and Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Justice Department, demanding a full investigation of the institution's accreditation eligibility. The document was signed by the Kootenai, Bonner, Boundary, and Spokane County Human Rights Task Force. The organizations further indicated that Board Chair Todd Banducci and newly elected trustees Greg McKenzie and Michael Barnes have created an adverse board majority that conducts itself counter to the civil and human rights and civil liberties protected by the U.S. Constitution, federal laws, Idaho laws, and NIC policies for all NIC employees and students. Notably, the organizations mentioned the repeal of the trustee board conduct policy, trustee Christie Wood call for trustee Todd Banducci's resignation, NIC faculty and staff's vote of no confidence for Banducci, and a series of harassment and assault allegations. If NIC's accreditation is negatively impacted, Laura Rumpler, who works as the communications director for the college, said that the college could lose federal funding, be ineligible to offer specialized health and auto courses, and no longer guarantee students that their credits would transfer to another institution. President Rick McLennan met with the college's executive accreditation and planning team on Tuesday, Laura Rumpler said, and has tasked them with taking the lead on developing an institutional response, which is required by the NWCCU to do.
Okay.
Greg McKenzie, one of the trustees that was cited as an issue, said that he has complete confidence in NIC's executive accreditation team to address the latest concern, as it did during the last accreditation investigation, which was received during the 2020 campaign. I should note that Laura Rumpler said that she is not aware of any past accreditation issues. And McKenzie also noted that there's always two sides to a story, and affording each party its due process is what's made America great. The college has until June 11th to provide a response, and something that I wasn't able to include in here is that Greg McKenzie, he and Todd Banducci have been very much so in support of each other. You know, he said that it's sad that the people that are attacking Banducci are going to this great lens. He did mention Christie Wood, who is the president of the Kootenai Human Rights Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
When I talked to Christie Wood, she said that she was not involved and she actually recused herself from any conversation about such a complaint letter.
There's not much. I just hope that it's solved. Like, North Idaho College was a huge part of my post-secondary education. And the fact that all those credits could transfer over to a larger university in state was huge. It's one of the, I mean, I almost like to think that it's more of an accomplishment to graduate college debt-free than actually graduating.
No, absolutely.
And I think that NIC had a huge part to do with that. So, I mean, that's one of the main reasons why people like NIC so much.
It makes me very sad to see this, and, you know, in the letter and talking to Laura Rumpler, the NWCCU has been watching NIC for months now, just because of everything that's been happening. They know the conflicts. They know the controversy. They've listened to the meetings. They've read the news reports. The NIC has been in national news coverage about what's going on. So it's no longer this.
They just need a period of quiet.
Town, but it's not a small town issue. This is like a big thing that people are nervous about.
The opposite of what they wanted, I'm sure.
Exactly. You know, what are you going to tell someone that's gotten their associate, they're about to get their associates, and then gets ripped out of their hands?
Tough situation. I really hope that things get better over there. As an alumni, I really hope things get better over there. Yeah. All right. A blast from the past. This is by Devin Weeks. An earth-shaking explosion rocked the Lakes Middle School campus and surrounding neighborhood. While no projectiles were actually shot and no one was hurt, it was quite the experience provided by the Washington Civil War Association to help students visualize what the Civil War was like 160 years ago. I attended something very similar in Wallace. It was cool. Quote, the cannon blast was loud and sort of gave me a pretty good perspective on what they experienced back then, eighth grader Robert Miles said Thursday. I love seeing all the reenactors show us what it was like in that time period. That's not something you can see every day. Roberts is one of U.S. history teacher Tanya Lilly's students who had served as a Southern general in a reenactment simulation to teach eighth grade students about the bloodiest war to take place on American soil. Quote, we divide the class into North and South, and we have a Northern general and a Southern general, Lilly said. They come in every day to class, and we do the reveille, and they salute. My generals call company attention, and stand and do roll call, and they get points for that. When they answer questions in class, we call it hand-to-hand combat, and they get points for that. That's good for her. That is great. I love when teachers get creative like that. Lily said her students reenacted the Battle of Shiloh by playing dodgeball in the gym. They learn about the Battle of Antietam, the deadliest one-day battle in all of American military history, on Monday. Lily invited members of the WCWA to the school to provide an even deeper understanding of the Civil War aspects such as camp life, entertainment, diet, injuries, field surgery, cavalry, and artillery. The WCWA is an educational nonprofit that honors ancestors who fought in or lived during the American Civil War.
We are talking about this today in the newsroom. I'm not a huge Civil War person, but I think the idea of like doing these period period things is really fun. I remember in eighth grade when I was in junior high, we did one for World War II.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I still remember to this day very clearly.
That's cool. So as somebody who's very, very up on the Civil War, that was my emphasis in both NIC and U of I. And did some cool stuff in middle school as well. We got to make hardtack. You know, it's really, really gross. We're allowed one cuss word on the show every day. So I'm going to use it on an old joke that my history professor told us in the middle of class. He told us that most soldiers in the Civil War died of dysentery, which is a shitty situation. Bad history joke. But shout out to now retired Mr. Newton.
I'm glad he made
the class laugh on that one pretty good. That was really awesome. And I remember it to this day. See, good teachers doing unique things, not just having to, not death by PowerPoint. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, the swearing really makes it memorable.
I think, yes, that's...
you know, no. that's some good teacher.
There's association there, though, but because of that, I remember that fact about the Civil War now. So I think it wasn't dysentery specifically, it was disease. But he mentioned that, and that was part of the joke. Okay, moving on to Shoshone News Press headlines for Friday, April 30th. I'm going to go on both of these. The first one Kellogg School District drops mask requirements. So Josh and I talked about this in the last episode, how the Kellogg School District was under immense pressure by certain parents and those in the community to drop their mask requirement down to a mask recommendation, and it came to be. The Kellogg School District unanimously voted to change the mask policy in their back-to-school plan from required to recommended during a special session on Tuesday night. Protesters gathered outside the district office, including a few with signs that they pushed up against the windows of the meeting room, while a handful of them reluctantly agreed to wear masks in order to be inside the meeting room for the decision. After hearing from representatives from the Panhandle Health District, as well as a written statement from the Kellogg School District Superintendent Dr. Nancy Larson, who also read the proposed change to the plan, a motion was made to approve the changes by Trustee Carolyn Turner and then seconded by Trustee Sam Gibbons. There were concerns over a recent spike of cases in Shoshone County, which had dropped back to the moderate orange category of the Panhandle Health District's four levels of COVID-19 risk last week, but had since returned to the minimal yellow category. I mean, it was bound to happen after Kellogg was kind of basically on an island in this situation. The city of Kellogg had dropped their mask mandate. Panhandle Health had dropped it a while ago. And then with, you know, the largest school district in our area, Coeur d'Alene, dropping theirs, there was immense pressure, especially here in North Idaho, to drop the requirement.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, because you called me a little bit earlier this week.
Yeah.
To ask about when ours here in Coeur d'Alene happened. Mm-hmm. And I was very surprised to hear that Kellogg still had theirs, you know. North Idaho's not too fond.
I didn't include it in the story because I didn't know for sure. Like, that's why I was I called you earlier. I was curious if Kellogg was the only school district in North Idaho that still had a mask requirement.
I think they might have been.
And I think they might have been, honestly. I haven't had that confirmed, but everybody that I've talked to that's knowledgeable about the situation, I think they are. So they were. It's funny, you know, the city of Kellogg were the first ones in North Idaho to pass a mask requirement that actually had some teeth to it. You know, like that actually, no tickets were ever written, but it was the first one that actually had a penalty if they so chose. And now they were the last, their school district was the last one to drop a requirement. So interesting.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Say the very least. All right. Jumping over to the side, this one by myself also. And well, the first one was Josh and I co-did that one. BOCC approves comp plan amendments. So this is a update on a saga that I've been working on since last September.
Saga.
Changes to the Shoshone County Comprehensive Plan are on the way following a Thursday afternoon decision by the Board of County Commissioners. In a 2-0-1 decision from the BOCC, 2-0-1 because Commissioner Hansen was not present. Both Commissioners Mike Fitzgerald and Jay Huber approved changes to the plan that had been previously recommended by the County Planning and Zoning Committee on October of 2020. The decision on Thursday came after the board invited interested parties to speak during a public hearing in the Shoshone County District Courtroom. The overwhelming majority of the commentators, both written and verbal, supported the perceived comp plan, proposed comp plan changes. Those who are unfamiliar, a comprehensive plan is essentially what building and zoning codes are based on. While the content of the plan is not law or code, it is used as guiding principle when P&Z creates their laws and codes. Moving forward, proponents, including the original petitioner Courtney Free, mainly cited preservation of the environment, natural beauty, and the local economy as reasons for the BOCC to accept the changes. Quote, I do believe developers should get a return on their investment, but not at the complete expense of the public welfare. So we need to formulate reasonable restrictions that everyone can live with and that don't deprive property owners of their rights. The few present that were in opposition that spoke up, including Wallace property owner Ryder Gaudreau, countered by arguing that the changes would clash with the existing language of the plan, discourage economic growth, and target a select number of private property owners in the area. Quote, when you come into Wallace, you see a lot of land and a lot of mountains. I think that 95 to 98% of the hillsides you see are actually public land. So this is only directed at a small number of people. Ryder, if you followed the saga previously, Ryder and Jones and Gaudreau LLC officially purchased 500 acres of land last year located south-southeast of Wallace from Layton Land and Timber. Included in that land was 40 acres of property on the hillside immediately south of downtown Wallace, unofficially Printer's Peak. It doesn't have a name, so we just kind of gave it one. There's a lot of hillsides south of Wallace, so kind of needed to give an identifier. So basically, moving forward, these will essentially allow the PNZ to take this into consideration when they start making codes and laws in the future for the city of Wallace and the surrounding area. The two amendments that have been approved were develop design standards and criteria for development on hillsides, and the city of Wallace's designation as a historical site should be protected and enhanced by preserving the natural environment and mountains surrounding Wallace through the adoption of a mountain overlay district.
I support it. I think that
I think I end up supporting it.
To a certain degree.
Yeah.
Especially just being down here in Coeur d'Alene, I was talking to someone yesterday about how places like Harrison, they're not going to change.
No.
And while I say that with all surety and, you know, hope in my heart, I don't want them to change.
Right.
And I think Wallace is one of those places. My father goes there every single time he comes up north for multiple reasons. Mm-hmm. But he loves it. He shows it off to everyone. I know that him and his friend from D.C., he's like giddy about the idea of showing him Wallace.
Yep.
So, yep. Yeah, I'd like to keep Wallace to Wallace.
I think I mostly agree with that. It does. I think when both people talked, it made total sense. I think both of them had very valid points. But at the end of the day, yeah, I think I'd agree with it. It's just there's a slight libertarian side of me that doesn't like. I think people should be able to do what they want with their property. But at the same time, again, I'm from Post Falls. I've seen the prairie disappear with
thousands of houses, property rights, and betterment.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, I agree with that. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. All right, and that's it for Shoshone News Press headlines. Let's jump up.
To Bonner County.
Bonner County Daily Bee. Yes.
Yes.
We've got headlines from, what was that going to be? April 28th. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's take a look here. All right. Peters seeks EBCLD seat. This is by Rachel Sun. Jalen Peters wants to bring conservative values to the East Bonner County Library Board of Trustees. Oh, we talked about this in the last episode. Peters, who owns the handyman business Concepts to Completion, has lived in the area for 4 years, has centered his campaign platform on his opposition to the library's mask requirement. Quote, I decided to run because of all that's going on in our world and our country. With not being able to go to the library in the past year and a half, he said, there's people making decisions locally that don't represent us. Peters runs alongside other challenger, Kathy Rose. Both are running for one of the two contested spots held by trustees Amy Flint and Janie Ash. While Peters' platform focuses heavily on the library's mask requirement, he said that he also wants to foster a sense of morality and love of country, which he believes is a role of the library. Some of the concerns Peters noted were recent webinars, including one on white supremacy, and recently held watch parties and discussions regarding climate change. The first, he said, raised concerns over critical race theory, which Peters said he believes is connected to Marxism. That concern mirrors the talking points many conservatives in Idaho legislature who have been vocal opponents to critical race theory and, quote, indoctrination in schools, although it's unclear whether the curriculum is currently being taught in any Idaho schools. In regard to climate change, Peters said he doesn't believe in it. Quote, I personally don't believe that global warming is a thing. I believe it's an agenda that's being pushed to regulate and control people through Marxism, he said. I gotta be honest, I don't know what a lot of that has to do with the library.
See, that's the conversation right
like,
now.
Like, we can sit here, you know, and have a political, like, we can talk about whether we agree or disagree with his political beliefs, but I think the core of the matter here is a lot of that, I just don't know what that has to do with the library.
Well, you know, I wrote a story about that here in Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah.
And it's a nonpartisan position.
Yeah.
And
or at least it should be.
You're allowed to have your opinions. That's perfectly fine, but it's kind of like if I work at McDonald's, mm-hmm, and I am a conservative, mm-hmm, I'm not going to be mad about something that is out of my control.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like I'm not going to make someone's decision based on what I've made for myself.
Right.
And I don't think everyone should be so pitted against each other.
I agree. And something as simple as a position at the library doesn't even need to be partisan, it seems like. That's just, you know,
there should be nothing that your political affiliation should sway.
Sure. Sure. And Josh and I talked about this in the last episode. Like, I think sometimes it's kind of strange that certain races have affiliations. I know some might disagree with me on this, but, like, I think it's weird that sheriffs run as, like, a Republican or Democrat.
I think it's...
Because at the end of the day, the law is the law.
Yeah.
I understand that it's open to interpretation and, you know, what should be done versus what is reality and yes. what is actually enforced. But
I would like to think that a Democrat and a Republican have the same views on who should get arrested.
Exactly. Like, you would think so. I guess I understand it. Like, who's going to enforce what laws more? But at the end of the day, the laws are the law, regardless of what side of the fence you're on. Yeah. But positions like that where it should be, I don't know, you could think of more extreme stuff like remember the race in this last election, the Soil and Water Conservation Board or something? Why was that? it's dirt.
It's dirt and water.
I know. That's funny. Okay, moving on to Thursday, April 29th.
Yes, this one, again, is by Rockstar Rachel Sun. Lake Bend Oriel School District gets financial updates. I will say that this story was very long. Everyone should go read it for the financial updates. But the majority of the evening, the Lake Bend Oriel School District trustees heard from the Lake Bend Oriel High School. A lot of what they talked about was the health of their students and the vitality of their students, specifically mental health and graduation rates.
Okay. Before it's Ponderay.
Ponderay. I'm so sorry. I'm not
You from were here. Such a Boise person.
I'm not from here. I'm so sorry.
I just wanted you to say it that I was going to correct. I wasn't going to let you do the whole episode. That'd have been mean. That'd have been so mean.
I mean, you're already mean. Most students at the school vastly exceeded expectations for growth, the principal, Geoff Penrose, said. However, Penrose said many students struggled to keep up with their studies while away from school, and graduation rates dropped in 2020. In 18 and 19, we reached our highest peak ever at 75% graduation, which, as I explained to you guys before, is very high for an alternative school in the state of Idaho, he said. We dropped down to 49% last year. The school also lost students during the pandemic, Penrose said. Not in enrollment, he said, but in engagement. Quote, they just checked out. I mean, we called and called. We begged and cajoled and set up, you know, drive-through packet pickups and parking lots, begging them to come in, he said. It was just a weird time for the entire nation, but especially students who are living in poverty or at risk. Also that night, the board heard a presentation from Joe Jansen, Director of Special Services, and Superintendent Tom Albertson on mental health services provided in schools. The school districts work with Kenitsku?
Yes.
Health services, Jansen said. No cost to the district. That relationship has made a major difference, Jansen said, because students don't have to go somewhere else for help. Although the partnership with them has greatly increased mental health services for students, there are still challenges the community has as a whole, and by extension, students face in their mental health care, said Superintendent Tom Albertson. Quote, we are kind of at a crisis point in our community at the lack of therapists and counselors for people who seek it outside of school, he said. It's still not enough. We are proud of what we're doing, but it's still not enough. Aside from the mental health care professionals that come into schools, many LPOSD schools have implemented health school-based wellness models, including the sources of strength at the secondary level and other campaigns at middle school and elementary levels. A number of students have been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and schizophrenia, Jansen said. Suicidal ideation has, in some cases, affected students as young as the elementary level. Quote, schools are a microcosm of our community, so if you can think of any stressors in our community, those are there, he said. For some of our students, being at school is the very best part of their day. They're being fed, it's warm, it's a nurturing environment.
Interesting.
Sad.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is something that's been talked about in every type, you know, every school, that this is an issue that it's, I mean, we've recently seen it in Silver Valley, unfortunately. I don't know. As long as, maybe, I mean, Help's always there. We'll put it that way. All right. Before we move on, I have a question for you. What does this say? There is no right answer here, by the way.
Kumelin Park?
What is that?
Kumelin?
Kumelin Park?
Kumelin?
Kumelin? Yes. Okay. So it's an inside Post Falls joke. Like there, no one says this the same way. Some people call it Q Park because they don't want to deal with it. Some people call it Qualum Park.
I feel bad.
On a elementary school trip, there was actually a Native American who came and like told us that the proper pronunciation is K-Elium.
K-Elium?
K-Elium. But literally no one calls it that. It's Qualum or Kumelin. Kumelin Park. I don't know why that ever picked up. It's fine. You said Pondere, and then that was the first thing that popped.
I'm so sorry.
That was the first thing that popped in my head. I was like, I wonder how she says this. And that was actually pretty good. Like, most locals just call it Kumelin Park or Qualum Park.
Kumelin?
K-Elium.
K-Elium.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, no, I understand why nobody says that. Or they just call it Q Park. Either way. Okay.
I'm just going to call it the park.
Any Post Falls people who listen to this, they'll be like, oh, yeah, I guess I've called it one of those at one time or another. Okay, jumping down to Friday, April 30th headlines. Forest Service finalizes restoration plans for Buckskin Saddle Area. I always like that name. It's also by Rachel Sun. The Forest Service will be implementing an integrated restoration project in the Idaho Panhandle National Forest starting this fall with road improvement activities at the Johnson and Granite Creek drainages, according to a press release. The Buckskin Saddle Integrated Restoration Project covers approximately 50,663 acres of land and covers the area on the east side of Lake Pendere, south of the Clark Fork River. It includes the reduction of hazardous fuels near private land, access, egress routes, and power lines. The project also allows for vegetation management on a total of 19,474 acres. That would include roughly 13,005 acres of commercial timber harvest and 6,469 acres of non-commercial harvest and fuel reduction, according to the release. The plan was signed off by Sandpoint District Ranger Jesse Berner, who said the plan is designed to increase the health and resilience of the forest against insects, disease, drought, and wildfires. Quote, "We look forward to implementing these restoration treatments within the Buckskin Saddle Project area," Berner said. "We've designated the treatments to enhance and restore vegetation communities, address hazardous fuels, repair old roads, and reduce sources of road sediment to benefit water quality and aquatic habitat. The Sandpoint Ranger District is now beginning to planning to implement the project." Quote, "We really appreciate the public and collaborative support throughout the project planning and development phases," Berner said. "This is a great example of working together to make our local community safer from wildfire risk and improving forest health." It's definitely needed. Written too many fire stories already the last couple weeks.
Sad.
Knock on wood.
This is plastic.
There's nothing. We have no wood in here other than that. It's plastic and drywall.
Lovely.
Sorry, everybody can blame me then if something catches on fire, I guess.
And then going all the way up to the Bonnie's Ferry Herald.
Yes.
We have Blumenauer.
Yeah, that's how I'd say that.
Blumenauer. Accepts plea deal, psychosexual evaluation ordered. This one is by Victor Corral Martinez. William Blumenauer, 46, pleaded guilty to 5 counts of lewd conduct with a child under 16 in a plea deal that dismissed 6 other identical charges. The Bonner's Ferry Police Department issued a criminal complaint on January 12th against William Blumenauer, alleging he did willfully and lewdly commit lascivious acts with the body of a minor under the age of 16 from 2012 to 2016. Initially 4 counts, then turned into 11 counts with new information provided, and Blumenauer had pleaded not guilty in an arraignment, but at the last moment accepted the plea deal at the pretrial conference. Part of the plea agreement is for Blumenauer to receive a psychosexual evaluation conducted by Robert Wyatt, a senior certified evaluator. Detailed in the court documents, Blumenauer is taking Wellbutrin to deal with his depression. For each crime Blumenauer is charged with, he may be ordered to serve consecutively or concurrently. He cannot change his mind about the plea deal and is locked in with those charges against him. Each charge carries a maximum penalty of life imprisonment in the state prison. According to his Facebook profile, Blumenauer is a radiologic technology strategist for the Boundary Hospital, who served in the U.S. Navy from 1992 to 1996 and the U.S. Army from 1996 to 2000. During the 2020 primary elections, Blumenauer ran for a committeeman position for the Bonners Ferry Kootenai precinct. He has previous involvement as a youth leader involving middle school-aged kids. Sentencing for Blumenauer will be conducted July 21st, 2021, under the jurisdiction of judicial officer Barbara A. Buchanan.
Interesting.
Terrible.
Terrible is right. We'll see how that shakes out. Hopefully Victor follows up on it.
He will.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course he will. Okay, Madison, that's it. We're through the episode.
Woo!
Through all the headlines. Good job. This is a good one.
Hopefully, the people agree.
If I just, I'll edit all the bad stuff out.
Oh, so you're going to take yourself out?
Yeah. Yeah, at least. It'll just be you talking and then long silences. And then you'll just listen to it by yourself and be like, this is the best episode ever.
It's like, wow, who is that amazing?
All right. Once again, we'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Hecla Mining Company. Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They're the largest primary silver producer in the U.S., responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills and developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit heclamining.com. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories that we talked about today or the ones we did not, please follow us at www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonepress.com, bonnercountydb.com, and the Bonners Ferry Herald.com. Please follow and subscribe to us on any podcatcher that you use. All of those are, there's no wrong way to listen. You know, we're on pretty much everything except I don't think we're on YouTube.
That's fine.
We're not there quite yet. We're
videotaping, so we'll get there one day.
But right now we're on everything else. So, and if you're curious or you're looking for a podcatcher, we have these little handy links in the stories that we post about the podcast on our social media. So you just click on one of those and follow it up. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in, and we will see you on Tuesday.